You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
6 minutes after 12, good afternoon to you. You won't miss a thing this lunchtime. You're with the Midday Report. You'll hear the other side of the taxi route fight in the next 40 minutes, get a view on how the Brits are reacting to the Bell Pottinger revelations, and some insight into what on earth is happening in and around Qatar. But first, in KZN, the former Secretary General of the ANC Youth League, Sindiso Magaka, is recovering after being shot 11 times in an attack he says is linked to political violence in the area. The attacks left several other people in hospital. At the same time, there are concerns of more violence, which may or may not be linked to the ANC's December conference. The KZN ANC's Mdumiseni Ntuli tells the Midday Report he can't confirm if this violence is about the ANC's leadership battle.
It's very difficult to say that with certainty. Of course, what is of deep concern to us is that we are no longer in the process of local government elections, where the suspicion was that comrades might have been victims of differences as a result of who becomes a candidate, a councillor or a mayor. Now that the process is about the ANC regional conferences, it's not very easy to say without any shadow of doubt that this thing has got to do with the processes internally in the ANC. But of course, now that this happened almost not very late in the afternoon, it's possible in our view that it could be easily detected by both the information of the victims or the information of those who were watching when this thing happened, for us to know where does this thing come from, whether it's coming from internally in our own ANC structures or is something that is coming from those who may be enemies of the ANC councillors in that area of any sort.
And Mdumiseni, are you worried there could be more violence?
We are concerned. We are deeply concerned. That is why part of what we decided on about a few weeks ago as a provincial executive committee was to ask for the Minister of Police to appoint a high-level task team which must come and reinforce the work of the Commission of Inquiry appointed by the Premier in our province, because we believe if we do not have a very firm hand coming from the national government, from a highly, highly trained team, from our security forces, we are likely to descend to a situation we once experienced in the early 90s, which is something that is really not supposed to happen anymore in our province, let alone in our country in general.
That's Mdumiseni Ntuli, spokesperson for the ANC in KwaZulu-Natal. You with the Midday Report, 8 minutes after 12. Meanwhile, at the same time, a series of comments by the DA's Gauteng leader, John Moody, in which he's blamed the ANC for violence that occurred in Sosanguve in Tswane this week. Councillor Mandla Nkomo is the member of the Mayoral Committee for Housing and Human Settlements in Tswane, part of the DA-led administration there. Councillor Nkomo, good afternoon to you. Why do you believe the ANC is responsible for this violence?
To be quite honest, and then obviously we know that they are responsible because they knew that they were going to have that particular event, and they showed up with a clear mandate so as to distract the sitting of that particular meeting.
Are you able to prove the ANC is mobilizing there? I mean, do you have evidence that it is ANC people, ANC officials behind this?
No, the thing is, not the first time that we managed to get such a problem in a particular ward. It happened at first when we were with the NEC and the mayor, but we're to be escorted with the Nyala. So the very same thing happened again. So we don't have any other doubt that we know that it's them who are responsible.
It is possible, though, if you look at what's happening around the country, there are many people who are frustrated for various reasons. It's entirely possible that this violence is almost spontaneous.
It is spontaneous, but obviously, remember that there's a change in, especially in the administrations. And therefore, and then we have the ward councillors officially at the ANC led. And then these are the ones who are willing this particular group, so as to ensure that we don't manage to have our sitting with the communities. So we know that, obviously, they're not happy with us, and then they're resorting to this kind of violence.
Are the police investigating?
Yeah, we have reported that to the police, and we hope that they'll be investigating.
Is it part, Councillor? I mean, do you believe this is part of an orchestrated campaign that the ANC refuses to accept that it's lost control of the city of Tswane in last year's elections?
Yeah, I think we have to be honest. I mean, I think it's very painful for them to accept that they're no longer in government in some of the municipalities. So, but obviously, we know that they're not good at being opposition, and hence they are resorting to that kind of like a behavior.
Councillor Mandla Nkomo, thanks very much indeed. A member of the Mayoral Committee for the City of Tshwane for Housing and Human Settlements on the line from the capital. Well, that's the view from the DA-led administration in Tshwane. But Nkinka Kakana from the Gauteng ANC tells the Midday Report they're not behind this violence.
We're definitely not responsible. I think the DA needs to get its house in order. The fact of the matter is that protests have been going on even throughout the days that, you know, the ANC was in power in Tshwane. And what we need to do is to channel that militancy in the right direction. We need to ensure that community grievances are addressed, regardless of who is leading whatever protest.
Does the ANC also have a responsibility to tell its supporters that they need to accept the DA as one? I mean, when the DA does try, when the DA-led administration in Tshwane, as the local government there, tries to arrange certain projects or to go and meet residents, some of these meetings have been disrupted.
There must be a distinction between political parties and communities. When communities come together and voice their grievances, they need to be addressed. And we have taken the responsibility. We still govern Gauteng. We have taken the responsibility to cooperate with municipalities regardless of who is in power in that particular municipality. I mean, you will have seen that the MEC of Housing has been active, working with mayors, regardless of who these mayors are, because they have the responsibility to ensure that there is service delivery in all parts of Gauteng. And we have equally have that responsibility. But to simply accuse the ANC of fueling this protest is really disingenuous, and the DA has to get its house in order. Delivery is what they need to focus on, and not accusations.
And Nkinka Kakana, spokesperson for the Gauteng ANC there. Sizwe Khadebe tells me on Twitter that that is the nub of the issue with the commissions of inquiry. We all know how decisive those are for the murder. I think he's being slightly sarcastic about that particular issue. You're at the Midday Report. You'll hear in a few moments from Lekono Mguni. We'll get his view on whether to expect more violence related to politics leading up to the ANC's December conference. Couple of seconds after 12:15, good afternoon to you. You at the Midday Report. You won't miss a thing. Well, let's get some analysis on the violence, both in KwaZulu-Natal, that seems intra-ANC, and on what's been happening in Tshwane, which the DA claims, the ANC denies, is orchestrated by the ANC. Lekono Mguni is political analyst on the line now from Durban. Lekono, good afternoon to you. Let's just start in KwaZulu-Natal. The violence we've seen, the attack on Sindiso Magaka, do you think that's linked to the December conference?
Stephen, yes and no. Yes, because there's an upcoming regional conference in Heregwala region, and that upcoming conference will, of course, determine the dynamics of how that region and influences the province, and the province influences the national contest. You'll also appreciate the fact that one of the front runners of the December conference come from Heregwala, and that being Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma. So, you know, everybody wants to get some support at home. I'm not implicating anybody. I'm just simply narrating that these are the dynamics at play. And therefore, of course, that region is highly contested on the basis of that. It might not even be that the national leaders have anything to do with it. It might be that the local leaders want to appear as kingmakers in that region, and therefore what I call curry favor in future with the leader that becomes that emerges as the leader of the ANC, because they would have been part and parcel of the people that carried their campaign. So yes, in that extent, no, in the sense that, Stephen, there are also some domestic issues there in that municipalities, highly contested issues of corruption. You might know that the president issued a proclamation in December last year for the SIU to investigate corruption in that particular municipality, and serious people have been implicated. So it might be that certain people fall either on the side that wants to expose corruption or on the side that wants to hide corruption, and therefore that creates ructions which may lead to the assassinations of people. But really the stakes are high in that region, both politically but also monetarily, in terms of the corruption that is ongoing in that area of the province.
I suppose it's a reminder of how stakes are higher for people on the ground. We talk about a December conference. You talk about what's happening in the ANC. Everyone talks about Dlamini Zuma and Ramaphosa. But for people on the ground, their lives are completely entwined in this.
Well, certainly their lives are seriously endangered, but also the lives of the national leaders, I think, Stephen. For the first time, I feel convinced that even some national leaders or provincial leaders, their lives are at stake and they ought to be vigilant. I'm also told reliably that, in fact, Sindiso himself was having bodyguards for some time now because majority of the senior leaders in that region are actually under some security, private security protection because of the difficulties of the political terrain that is there. So certainly, yes, the leadership battle at the top is materially probably starting to take its toll on some people on the ground. It's much easier for people on the ground to fight and probably execute each other on behalf and on the name of national leaders. So it becomes important then to ask what will be the response or what is the response of the national leadership to this question? Because we do know, Stephen, that much of this violence is intra-party, and therefore it is then incumbent on the ANC to sort out its house in terms of the internal democracy. But in terms of what the diagnostic report of the Secretary General in the last policy conference spoke about, that the contestation of power in the ANC is beginning to introduce a certain political bankruptcy in the ANC in the sense that people are actually vying for positions on the basis of resources and proximity to state power to dispense patronage rather than to advance whatever you call the National Democratic Revolution or the ethoses of the Freedom Charter or the ethoses of governance of the ANC. But it's no longer about that. It's about actually self-preservation and self-enrichment. That is why people are going into power positions.
20 minutes after 12, you at the Midday Report, talking to the political analyst Lekhona Mguni on the line from Durban. Lekhona, just change gear. There's been a suggestion from the a region of the ANC in the Eastern Cape that Zweli Mkhize, currently the ANC treasurer, that he should be a compromise candidate. It would avoid a contest between Cyril Ramaphosa and Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma. Has it got any chance at all of happening?
Well, look, I mean, it's not surprising. Also, it's important which region. It's Alfred Nzo region, right? And Zweli Mkhize has been an influential figure in that region. He had been asked at some point to come and level out political differences in that region, intervened competently so, and therefore he does have a constituency or what we may call a base. Of course, just the language in which it is couched, they realize that Zweli as a front runner running his own campaign against the two would not make it. This is why they are now asking that he be a compromise candidate for both factions. But unfortunately, Stephen, Zweli Mkhize is not the most uniting figure in the ANC. Some people do not like him in the ANC for whatever reasons. He has fallen out of favor with a number of leaders. When you propose a midway candidate, you propose a person that can literally unite the organization, who has integrity enough for both sides to actually respect that person and put their weight behind that person. So Zweli Mkhize is seen as having his own vested interest. It's no different to what the president was proposing in his closing remarks at the National Policy Conference, which people called out as him trying to bargain for Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma at all possible avenues, when he said, well, we contest the president and then the losing president becomes deputy president. It seems as if people are saying we might have lost the real battle if we were to put Zweli on the slate and say he must contest Cyril and Nkosazana. Therefore, let us ask that he be the third candidate. It's a compromise, but a compromise that is vested with serious political interests and probably not for the better good of the African National Congress. And therefore, if he wants to contest, he must contest. But if they want a midway candidate, Stephen, they'll have to look beyond the current NEC. I like the suggestion by someone who said, a person who will unite the ANC is not in the current NEC, because this current NEC is part of the rot. They've all presided over the decline of the African National Congress.
Well, look, Corner, 5 months out, you look at what's happening, look at the policy conference. Who's ahead? Who's going to win?
Stephen, the ground has shifted significantly. I never thought I'd actually make this admission. If we were talking 2 months ago, I would have given it to Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma fair and square. The ground has shifted. She has also gone to ground a bit, and I'm starting to observe that she's no longer as out there as she was when she came back from the African Union. It does seem to suggest that maybe some steam in her campaign is running out, or she's realigning and not agreeing behind the scenes on who should be on her slate, which is a rumor that is strong in terms of how David Mabuza got out of that slate, that she was disagreeing. So there seems to be a lot of problems in-house in her campaign, and that is taking some steam off her campaign. So where we are, I think it's a 40-45. I'll still give it to her, because in the provinces that you look at, the major provinces, you still find some people that are incumbent to her favor. I am definitely waiting, Stephen, for the outcomes of the Provincial Congress of the Eastern Cape to gauge some direction. It is also not clear that David Mabuza is entirely lost to the Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma campaign at this stage, unfortunately. So I think we are literally back in a haze where we say 50-50, let us wait for some good indicators objectively, and they are going to come very much soon in the next 2 months.
Lukhono Mguni, thanks as always. Political analyst on the line from Durban.
702, The Midday Report. SMS Stephen
on 31702.
6 minutes away from your next eyewitness news update. The Mpumalanga Tourism and Parks Agency says shooting the four lions who escaped from the Kruger National Park last week was the right decision. Tim Neary is a conservationist. He's on the line from Lanseria. Tim, good afternoon to you. What do you think?
Good afternoon, Stephen. Unfortunately, I have to agree with him, and for a number of reasons as well. Once lions start to get it in their head that they can escape a fence, particularly a fence as complicated as somewhere like Kruger Park, they become habitual escapees. And I know people are now also bellowing and snorting and saying that we should, you know, take these cats and do something else with them. You've got to remember that this is not your common or garden moggy in the back garden hunting a little bird. So we've killed a couple of cattle now. What happens if a child had been killed during that time? And a couple of other issues you need to understand as well is the lions in the Kruger National Park, and we've got pretty strong rules around disease management in South Africa. So, for example, we can't move buffalo around that have got corridor disease or a variety of other diseases. The lions in Kruger Park have FIV, which is a feline AIDS. They invariably also have tuberculosis. So we can't uplift those lions and import them or export them to another part of the country. Simply not allowable in terms of biodiversity management in this country. And of course, the last one that you have to worry about is why don't we catch them and take them to the back of Kruger National Park and dump them? Well, lions have also got a hierarchy in places like Kruger Park, and all you're doing is you're moving a bunch of cats into an area that may have an existing pride. And remember that with all the droughts, etc., there's been a lot of movement in animals following the prey base around the place. So now you end up putting those lions into a new area, disrupting an existing pride and creating absolute hell. And they're moving out of the park because most probably the area that they were in is overpopulated with lions. It's a little uncomfortable for them. They've been kicked out of the prides. And this is the usual behavior where the boys will get together and form a coalition and then go walkabout. Unfortunately, these guys seem to have decided to take up travel at the same time.
Tim, I mean, we get stories like this from time to time. There was, what was that tiger's name? Punjo, I think it was. There was a hippo that got stuck in someone's pool. I mean, it sounds like we need to take better care of our wild animals.
Stephen, got to remember that we need to take better care of our humans because they're occupying the space that the animals used to do. So it only becomes an upsetting situation when the darn animal comes into your area, be it the hippo or, of course, that confounded tiger that we shouldn't have had wandering around the streets anyway. But yes, it's not unusual, Stephen. It's not unusual to have elephants escaping the park, all sorts of things. And unfortunately, when they come out of the place like the park where they're protected, and most of the parks are, you know, it's really great for the animal because it's not a concern to anybody in the park. But as soon as it comes out, then it's classed as a rogue animal. And very often it's just doing what it's doing naturally. Animals, you've got to remember, if we take DNA sampling of the giraffe in Kruger National Park, we'll find that those giraffes have come up and down all the way from Kenya, all the way back down to South Africa. So there's always been this huge movement of animals. And I often wonder just how inbred it is for animals to move.
Tim Neary, as always, thanks very much indeed. Conservationist on the line from Lanseria.
The Midday Report. Business
with Stephen Grotus.
The CWN Business is brought to you by FNB. It's more than just business to you. That's why they help. Kumba Iron Ore says it expects half-year profits to rise by as much as 58% due to a recovery in iron ore prices. The company says its headline earnings a share for the 6 months to the end of June will be up by between 46 and 58%. Kumba says the increase in earnings is mainly because of higher export iron ore prices, which have been partially offset by the stronger rand to the dollar exchange rate. And the rand's firmed against the dollar today, extending recent gains as the rand recovers from losses inspired by domestic policy uncertainties. There's US data out later today, which could have an impact on the rand in later trading. On the markets at the moment, the JSE All Share is, well, flat, but up 0.05% to 53,326 points. Resources down 0.33% at 32,078. Industrials up 0.15% at 72,573. Gold at the moment, $1,219.42 an ounce. Platinum, $906. Oil at the moment, $48.36 a barrel. And the currencies, the rand to the euro, brace yourself, 1504 to the British pound, 1708. To the American dollar at the moment, 13.17. Could have been worse. More, of course, on The Money Show tonight with Bruce Whitfield between 6 and 7 this evening.
The Midday Report. Stephen's on Twitter at Stephen Hortus.
Zaki Matabula is making the point. KwaZulu-Natal rough on politics. They're killing each other like it's nobody's business. Fikile Mbalula must make arrests. That side on these killings. That's Zaki's point. And Bahlele Kunene says Dlamini Zuma not going to walk into the union buildings. And if Jacob Zuma needs her to save him from wearing orange, they must do more. Who wears orange? Oh, that's right. People in prison wear orange. And Gary Shander talking about SAP, the software firm that's caught up in the Gupta corruption scandal, says they work through a partner channel. Who was the partner that won the deal? And then Zaki Matabula talking about the situation in Tshwane, saying the community there has never given the DA a chance to work. You can join the conversation. Tweet me at Stephen Crotus.
The Midday Report with Stephen Hortus.
24 minutes to 1 o'clock. Don't forget, you can subscribe to our podcast at iTunes. You can also go back to 702capetalk.co.za. Listen back to any of the interviews we've done on the program. You may want to hear again what's been happening in KwaZulu-Natal and also Lekorne's insights on the situation regarding the ANC's leadership race. Yesterday on the Midday Report, you heard the Wata Taxi Association explaining that they were going to chat to court to challenge the closure of taxi routes into and out of Soweto. Wata also denied being behind any of the violence that's led to the decision by the Gauteng provincial government to close that those taxi routes. Well, Zipatela Shezi is the spokesperson for the Nanduwe Taxi Association. This is the other taxi association in that area on the line from Soweto. Zipatela, good afternoon to you. Thanks for your time today. What's your view on this decision to close those routes? Zipatela, I hope you don't mind. I was going to ask you, can we speak to you in English quickly? Would you mind?
Sorry?
Can we speak in English?
Yes.
What do you think? Oh, dear. Okay, that wasn't me. Don't know what happened there. We'll try and get Zipatela Shezi back, spokesperson from the Nanduwe Taxi Association. We had spoken to him to set up the interview. Not quite sure what happened there. I'm sure there'll be moments that some people will remember on this radio station that will remind them of a certain conversation. All right, 22 minutes to 1 o'clock. We'll try and get some more for you from the Taxi Association. We do want to get their view on what is happening in Soweto.
702 and Cape Talk.
The Midday Report.
Well, I suppose it was inevitable, the reaction on Twitter to that moment, shall we say, with the Taxi Association. Floyd and Kuna, lol, so the Taxi Association decided to speak to Stephen and Zulu. The guys made my day. You tried, Stephen. Floyd, I'm not going to insult you by trying my Zulu. I'm really not. Someone who calls themselves, this is one of the best Twitter handles I've seen, Afro Melanin, says this taxi association is doing a lumka on poor Stephen Curtis. Sibonelo Zakalala says, high five, Stephen, for passing that impromptu test. And Sipasihle Magubani makes a more serious point, saying, learn South African languages. Yeah, super sichle. I mean, look, we had spoken, we had agreed to do it in English, so I'm not sure what happened. I think he was just caught a little bit by surprise. Brighton Berger just says, such a pity the interview was cut short. And Sizwe Khadebe says, hey, maybe montage that interview. Okay, thanks, Sizwe. Well, you can join the conversation. I did expect that reaction. You could quite happily say that I deserve it. But we will try and get back. I do think that's an important story, what's been happening in Soweto there. Let's move on, as they say in the classics. A series of comments by the Deputy Police Minister Bongani Mkhongi, who is in Hillbrow at the Hillbrow Police Station, following claims about a robbery at the station, which he says is not true. EWN's Mia Lindeke at the Hillbrow Police Station for us. Mia, good afternoon to you. What's the Deputy Minister been saying about foreign nationals?
Stephen, the Deputy Minister says that in Hillbrow we've got about 80% foreigners in that area, and he said that the country fought hard for democracy and for the land, and that South Africans can't just surrender our land, because currently South Africans are struggling. They don't have any houses, they don't have land, and he says that foreign nationals are usually, especially in, here in Hillbrow, are occupying buildings, and he says that this is a serious problem, and he will be actually writing and giving these submissions that the Hillbrow police made to him today to the police minister, Fikile Mbalula. He says that on this question about the foreigners in Hillbrow, he says that we must actually, the government must actually give people houses in this area and not allow foreign nationals to hijack these buildings. And they say that usually these foreigners are involved in criminal activities. But he also added that by saying this, he says that this statement is not xenophobic. And he says that he also plans to do something about these old buildings. Either it must be refurbished or it must be demolished.
So he's saying these buildings must be demolished. The mayor of Joburg, Herman Mashaba, has been making similar comments.
That's correct. And Stephen, he says that he views this as a serious problem. We do know that in some instances, some of these buildings are too old, and it's a serious health risk. And also some of these buildings, actually, the technicians don't, update all don't do regular visits. So it's a health risk, but it also it causes a lot of fires. And he says that it's a serious problem, and it links actually in to other problems where you've got criminals, taking some people hostage, or there's criminal activity in these hijacked buildings, and that is something that the police will look into. I don't know if they're going to work hand in hand with the city, but I would assume if you want to get something done, you have to speak to the city as well.
There's also been a comment about white people and firearms. What comment is he making there?
The question was actually raised by Eyewitness News, and that this was in fact about the police killings. If police officers are being killed by criminals, then where are they getting these firearms from? And the Deputy Police Minister said that, not all these firearms had been handed over after apartheid. So some of these white people are still using these firearms to train young people, and then he says that he's very concerned about this, the fact that police officers are being killed by criminals, and he also said, what must we then do as police officers if we are being shot at? Must we send Nkosi Sikelel Afrika, or must we return fire? And he also compared it, saying, just like, medical doctors or even nurses, you have to use all your equipment. So if police give them all these equipment, firearms, police officers must use it when they're in a situation where they feel their lives are being threatened.
It seems that he's taking really quite a hard line.
Definitely. But he said that he's going to speak to Fikile Mbalula, the police minister. And he says that, this is criminality in Hillbrow is a serious problem, but it's actually, widespread, not only in Hillbrow. But police officers even say that they feel unsafe, especially here in Hillbrow. And they've made a submission asking him and police minister Fikile Mbalula to actually, light up the Hillbrow area, get more street lights, and then also get more CCTV cameras so that they can monitor, some of these criminalities, and they can actually have hard evidence so they can do something about this.
EWN's Mia Lindeke. More from her at ewn.co.za. Check back later in the day.
The Midday Report on your number one news and talk station.
14 minutes now to 1 o'clock. In the UK today, a protest is being planned by South Africans living there at the headquarters of the PR agency Bell Pottinger, after it admitted to being involved in a divisive project that it itself has called offensive as part of its work for the Gupta family. The phrase white monopoly capital seems to partially have come from them. Correspondent in London, Alex Yilisev, there for us. Alex, afternoon to you. What are South Africans actually going to do there today?
You know, if you look at previous experiences, the community here is not by any means large, so you're not going to be expecting a mass protest of any kind. But they certainly are vibrant. They come out in numbers, they get together, and usually it all goes fairly peacefully. And this is just a picket that wants to put on record a protest against what was done. Looking at the previous one that was held just outside South Africa House in central London, I'd imagine there'd be lots of posters and placards and people making speeches, and we will obviously be keeping an eye on that. But really, I think it's a message of defiance. It's a message that there's got to be more information that comes forward here, and the apology that has been issued up until now is simply not enough.
Bell Pottinger has been hugely criticised here. Pravin Gordhan said this week he wouldn't accept their apology. How's it been viewed in the UK? What reaction has there been there?
Absolutely. I've been following some of the reaction in South Africa, and it seems like it's growing. Those voices are getting louder. Those calls for accountability, for transparency. But I have to confess, it hasn't been making huge ripples here in the UK. Some of the main publications, The Guardian, BBC, Financial Times, they've all had a crack at it, and they have covered this. They have explored the issue. But by no means is this something that many people are talking about just yet. It may get to that point in a couple of weeks when there's a fuller report that comes out from an independent law firm that is investigating the work that Bell Pottinger did in South Africa. Perhaps once that detail comes out, there's going to be more media focus on it. It's not top of mind. There's big global and European issues going on at the moment. And as I have said, it has been covered. But I think this picket is probably the first real sign of something happening on this soil that's going to be looking at that issue in a different way than just articles that go into the mainstream news.
Is there any hint from Bell Pottinger that it's actually going to change what it does? I mean, it really does have a very controversial list of clients.
Well, I think if you look at the conversation and the mood in South Africa, there's very much a "you messed with the wrong country" kind of idea that is starting to develop following those email leaks. But certainly there's been nothing here that suggests there's going to be some massive change. Of course, if you look at the apology that was issued, it was issued, but then there was silence. The Twitter account has been quiet. There haven't been any follow-up press briefings or anything like that. We've tried to put in some inquiries to the company. We're searching for more answers. I know other journalists are too. And there have been a couple of articles in the Financial Times and I think one of the trade publications where there have been follow-up comments. But certainly the company has issued that apology, and it seems like, at least for now, it's gone to ground and is keeping quiet. If somebody else is reading anything more into that, I'm not, because it doesn't seem like there has been any major change of direction.
Alex Yilisev, thanks very much indeed. Correspondent in London watching it there, talking about London at the moment. South Africa lost a first wicket already, I'm afraid, in the second test against England. South Africa currently 20-1.
The Midday Report on your number one news and talk station.
8 minutes to 1 o'clock. I don't know if you've heard the news out of Jerusalem in the last few hours. Two Israeli police officers have been killed there in Jerusalem's old city, just outside one of the world's most important religious sites. EWN's Paula Scare there for us. Paula, good afternoon to you. What happened?
Well, Stephen, in the early hours of this morning, three Israeli Arabs who came from the north of the country tried to enter the Temple Mount compound, and it's always guarded, particularly on a Friday when there are thousands of Muslims who come for their midday Friday prayers. It's always guarded with Israeli security officers. They had with them rifles. They started firing at the police officers. In the last hour, we've had confirmation that two police officers died. They were earlier reported as being critical, and another one is still in hospital. The three attackers were killed at the scene, and we understand that there are some injuries to passers-by. Now, subsequent to that, the area has been closed. There are no permissions being allowed for Muslims to come today and pray. This is a significant step by Israel because the last time it made such a move was 17 years ago. So subsequent to this, there have been protests breaking out across the West Bank where the police are on high alert.
In other words, when something like this happens, it really does raise the temperature for the next few days at the very least.
It certainly does. I mean, as I said, we have police on high alert across the West Bank, particularly in Jerusalem. I've been following closely protests that are happening right now in the Palestinian city of Bethlehem. Now, we know at least one Palestinian has been killed there. This is going to cause huge outrage amongst Palestinians, not only those who are trying to get to the Temple Mount to pray, but also general sentiment across the West Bank. So it is Israel's way of trying to deal with the situation. If you follow what comments have been made on social media, a lot of Israelis are angry, calling for Prime Minister Netanyahu to take more harsh steps. But inevitably, whatever steps he's going to take are only going to infuriate the Palestinians and potentially lead to even more violence. So it's almost a no-win situation, if you like.
Paula, is it possible to know at this stage if this was a planned attack or if it was only three people who were working together?
We don't have any confirmation at this stage, but my assessment, just having covered these type of stories in the past, that it's probably three people working together. We might hear a claim of responsibility. The last time that there was an attack in Jerusalem, if you remember, was actually when a policewoman was killed, and at that time, Islamic State claimed responsibility. Now, there's been a lot of debate in Israel since then whether or not this is accurate, because Islamic State claims responsibility more often than not, even if they didn't carry out attacks. And the final assessment from the Israeli security side was that Islamic State hasn't yet, I mean, let me put yet in brackets, because hopefully that won't come true, but that Islamic State doesn't have operatives working inside Israel, particularly amongst the Israeli Arab community. We might hear Islamic State claim responsibility. It always takes time to confirm those kind of reports. We'll certainly hear calls of acceptance. We might hear Hamas saying that this was a good deed. They often come out with those kind of statements after these kind of attacks in Jerusalem. But at this stage, all we know about the three perpetrators is that they came from inside Israel. That is significant because in the past, the perpetrators were normally Palestinians coming across the border from Palestine. This was from a city, Umm al-Fahm, which is the largest Israeli Arab city in the north of the country. So it certainly raises concerns amongst the Israeli security establishment how these kind of shotguns and rifles that the perpetrators had access to made their way into Israel and into a local city.
Paula Slea, thank you very much indeed on the line from Jerusalem.
The Midday Report on your number one news and talk station.
Well, in England, South Africa unfortunately have already lost their first wicket on the first day of the second test against England. South Africa at the moment 21 for 1. Dean Elgar is out. Hashim Amla's on 2. Hanno Kunz on 13. And Jeremy Fredericks is watching it with us. Jeremy, afternoon to you. Not the start we would have wanted.
Good afternoon to Steve. Yeah, not the start we wanted, but it's always going to be difficult. South Africa winning the toss earlier on, and it's probably debatable whether they should have bowled first, but just hearing at the interview, Faf du Plessis saying that this wicket plays difficult, and also listening to what Haseman said, the last couple of games played here, when teams batted first, especially in county cricket, they got over 400 runs. So I just think South Africa needs to weather the storm. It's going to be a trying morning. They've got to get through this first session probably unscathed. And I would say if they can go to lunch with only one or two wickets down, I would think, you know, it would be a mini victory one.
Faf du Plessis back, that surely makes a bit of a difference?
I think it makes a massive difference in the side. I don't think, you know, last week Dean Elgar captained pretty well. You know, we lost our chances at Lord's and being there personally. First time I've been to Lord's and seeing us lose, because every time I've been there, we've won. So it was a bit disappointing. But you know what? You know, they've had a lot of disruptions in the team. The death of Russell Domingo's mom, and we wish him all the best. And, you know, may her dear soul rest in peace. It's been a trying time. Faf du Plessis not being there, and then now Rabada out of this test match. It would have been interesting on this wicket if Rabada had played.
Wouldn't it just? I still feel that Rabada was badly treated there. JP Duminy finally being dropped.
Yes, you know, it's long overdue. I mean, I've run out of patience myself a long time ago already. And, you know, a lot of the public, there was big public outcry. But, you know, one just needs to say, who else in South African cricket, you know, the A team had an abysmal tour to England. Who else has put up their hand and said, right, we want to take his place? And the time has come now that he needs to be dropped. and probably to give other players a chance. And I just think it's the right decision. You know, JP Dumney is such a talented player. I don't think there's anything wrong with his ability. I just think it's his mental capacity to deal with the pressures of Test cricket at the present moment that is seriously letting him down.
The England team's looking quite settled, Jeremy. I mean, this is, I think, must be most worrying for all of us. I think it's pretty much the same 11 from the first test. They've got a real chance to get some consistent form going.
Well, absolutely. And just going back to the first test, before lunch, we had them four down. They were in all sorts of trouble. We were abysmal after, as well as we played good cricket before lunch at Lord's on the first day. We were absolutely terrible after lunch in that session and allowed England to dominate. And I just think, you know, if you put them under pressure, let's see how good they are. They really are. They are settled side, but they haven't been tested yet. And so, we need to put a decent score on the board here, and let's really get at their throats, test them, and see really then how good they are. And then I'll be able to say, look, this is a very, very good England side. Individually, yes, there are some genius players there in Stokes, and I think this the Root, their captain, I mean, he's a phenomenal player. But I'd like to see them under amazing pressure and then see how they cope with it, because that then to me illustrates how good a side you really are.
How well would you have played against the Australia of, say, 10 years ago? And Kagiso Rabada, I mean, as I said, I still feel he was badly treated, but I would have liked to have seen him play today.
Well, you know, this is here or there, and I really think, you know, in the heat of battle, you know, things are said on the cricket field and it's left there. Maybe we should just get rid of the stump mic and not allow people to hear what is being said, and then there wouldn't have been any fight. In the olden days, you know, when guys like Botham and these guys played, and Dennis Lilley and Thomas, I would have been interested with the words flying around there, how much test cricket they would have really played. I just think sometimes some of these laws are just farcical and a joke.
Sometimes you just need an education. Jeremy Fredericks, thanks so much. Really appreciate it. Cricket commentator on the line from Cape Town. Oh, that's it for the Midday Report today. Sorry, my bad there. The Midday Report, I'm taking a couple of days off, but the Midday Report will be back with you on Monday. It's just gone 1 o'clock.